Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 26. I am announcing a thank you giveaway, so don't miss it. And very related to that announcement, Mormon Happy Hour will be live with My Book of Mormon and Naked Mormonism at Squatters on the Friday during Sunstone, July 27th. Stay tuned for details. Mike Norton was arrested while filming a video at the Jordan River Temple this past Friday, June 29th, on his birthday. The charge was criminal trespassing, but he was not filming inside the temple this time. He did spend 5 hours in the Salt Lake County Jail, and he will be coming on Mormon Happy Hour this week to tell us all about his experience. So if you have any questions for him, please submit them in our Facebook group, Mormon Happy Hour, or on Instagram, Twitter, at mormonhappyhour@gmail.com, or through the Mormon Happy Hour website. I am thrilled to introduce you to my new guest host for Mormon Sexsmiths. Yes, they're back. But before we do get into the fun stuff, we both have a word of caution regarding predators in the ex-Mormon community. And finally, Delaney Darko stops by once again to share her reactions with me regarding the recent changes to the youth worthiness interview guidelines that were just announced. Next week, we will hear from Mason Proxy once again with a few more of his uniquely wonderful Mormon zodiac signs. We have a beehive, a tapir horse, and an angel with a flaming sword to look forward to. Which sign is yours? I will also be bringing you a beer expert to teach us what we don't know for next week's life pro tip. Thank you again for all who have supported me during this new transition on Mormon Happy Hour. It's been a busy but wonderful time. I wanted to give a shout out to Kendall and Kate, who generously contributed to Mormon Happy Hour this week. Thank you so much. And welcome to Camille, who was our newest Patreon subscriber. And Kate increased her donation to the $10 tier that I silently created a few weeks ago. The, quote, become as a god, no priesthood necessary tier. You should really go check it out. Okay, I've got some amazing news. Mormon Happy Hour has been invited to join with My Book of Mormon's Marie Kent and Naked Mormonism's Bryce Blakenagel for an amazing live episode recording at Squatters the Friday night during Sunstone this July 27th. The topic we'll be disseminating is the demise of Joseph Smith. Okay, so if you've never caught an episode of My Book of Mormon or Naked Mormonism, let me spell out the dynamic. Marie is a never-Mormon, reading through Mormon scripture and prophecy for the first time ever, while the knowledgeable Bryce fills in the context and history surrounding whatever is being read. Most recently, both Miranda and I were invited on to tackle DNC 132, the polygamy prophecy, and it was wild and crazy. Marie brought the incredulous, fresh outside perspective of the madness. Bryce brought all the facts to set the stage, and Miranda and I brought the penis jokes. Yes, I'm serious. Please go check out the episode. I will link it in the show notes. So this is the good time that we will be bringing you in front of a live audience from the top floor of Squatters in downtown Salt Lake City. I am so fucking excited to join up with Marie and Bryce again. I don't know how I'll last until the end of July. If you're in town, please, please come. There will be a $5 admission to cover the cost of renting out the top floor. Please tip your servers generously. If you've never participated in a drinking game based on LDS scripture, this is your chance. Seriously. Check out the episode on DNC 132 and you can see exactly how it's done. We will start the show around 8 to give everyone a chance to eat and wander over after the last session of Sunstone for the day. So just to recap, don't miss the amazing mashup of Mormon Happy Hour, My Book of Mormon, and Naked Mormonism as we tackle the demise of Joseph Smith live on Friday, July 27th at 8 p.m. at the Squatters in downtown Salt Lake City, located at 147 Broadway. This will be an all-ages show with a $5 admission. I cannot wait to see you there. Are you ready for something incredible? As a grateful thank you for the generous support that you listeners have given to Mormon Happy Hour to help the show grow and meet our goals, including traveling and recording at Sunstone this July, I am giving away a pair of 3-day full passes to Sunstone's Summer Symposium this July. That is a $400 value. This drawing will be open to all Patreon and Venmo supporters. There is still time to be a supporter in either of those ways before the drawing. The deadline for entry is July 14th. Sunstone begins on July 25th. Please reach out to me, Colleen Payne Dietz, on Facebook, through Mormon Happy Hour, on Instagram or Twitter, the email at mormonhappyhour@gmail.com, or through the Mormon Happy Hour website. Google will get you there just fine if you just search for Mormon Happy Hour. Let me know you would like to be entered in the drawing. To become a supporter, please visit patreon.com/mormonhappyhour and receive bonus content, or at venmo.com/mormonhappyhour for a one-time contribution. So remember, to be eligible for the free passes, be a supporter at Patreon or Venmo, and let me know you want to be entered into the drawing by July 14th. The winner will be announced during the episode released on July 16th. I want to welcome to the show Camille Cook. I have handpicked this one out for you special. She is amazing. I needed to find someone to do Mormon sex myths on Mormon Happy Hour that had as much enthusiasm in the topic that I do. And because it's been too long since we had him on the show, and so I wanted to bring him back, and I knew that I had to find Camille. So I wanted to introduce Camille. She's a Facebook friend, as so many in the ex-Mormon community are to me. And I'm so glad that I found her. So I wanted to give her an opportunity to introduce herself, and so you can kind of get to know her a little bit. And then she's going to be doing Mormon sex myths with me for Mormon Happy Hour. Yay! So,
Yay! Hi! I'm so excited. Well, first, I just have to say that I am legitimately a fan of this podcast, and it's been so much fun for me to listen to it. And I especially love the sex myth segment, so I'm excited to help you out with that. So just a little bit about me. I consider myself an ex-Mormon, although I haven't removed my name from the records, but I feel like that's on its way. But I've been married for 21 years. My husband's out of the church with me. We have 5 kids. I am a school counselor for middle school kids, so that's fun. So talk about sex myths. There's a few that happen there. Let's see what else. Oh, I do a lot of performing in musical theater especially, so I'm busy doing that a lot. I actually have a daughter who just came out as bisexual yesterday on Facebook.
Wow.
So besides that though, even before that was a thing, I've always been a very vocal advocate for the LGBTQ+ community, for equality, and just talking about that. Which was like a big, huge reason why I ended up leaving the church. I also do a lot of advocacy for suicide prevention and mental health awareness. So that's kind of my thing. I also really like sex. I like having sex. I like talking about sex. And I think it's really important to normalize the conversation. So I'm always excited about making people feel uncomfortable. It makes me happy. So that's a little bit about me. I'm also really shy. Just kidding. I'm not shy at all. So yeah. Is that good? Is that a good intro?
That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay, good.
For joining me and being kind of so I'm not just monologuing. They're not funny if I'm just monologuing. So I need someone to kind of help bring it out. So thank you.
I feel like I can help you. Yes.
Awesome.
This is good.
All right. So before we get into it, I unfortunately had something else that I wanted to kind of talk about I feel the need to address predators within ex-Mormon communities because it has come up again. And so I wanted to just kind of say a few things quickly, briefly. This is a difficult topic. It's difficult to talk about, and it's difficult also to listen to. So I apologize that we are kind of deviating from the lightheartedness for just a minute, but please hear me out, hear us out. And as you know, many of you already know, I do have a background or a history and experience with rape at BYU. And so being active within a community that fights against sexual assault and rape and how it's handled is definitely something that's passionate for me. So I'm very frustrated that we have to talk about this again today, but I wanted to kind of put it out there because enduring a faith crisis often puts us in a very vulnerable, isolated, and confused place. And unfortunately, predators know this about faith crisis, and they often take advantage of this. And so I want to publicly offer myself as a safe place. I'm an advocate, and I'm a believer. And as because of my history, I've been there. I know what it feels like. No means no, period. If your no is not respected, then the blame is on the one trespassing your boundaries, not on you. I just want to put a call out there. All members of the ex-Mormon community or Mormon or anyone who's listening, especially men, respect no. Respect boundaries. And consent looks like a high five and a hell yeah. And if you're not getting that, if you're not always looking and getting that enthusiastic response, that enthusiastic consent, then you should not proceed. Alcohol, we've talked about, you know, first time drinking tips, things to keep in mind. If you haven't listened to the first time drinking tips, I'll post them in the show notes. We're going to keep doing those to kind of keep us all safe when we're trying alcohol for the first time or the third time or the fifth time or whatever. They're always good things to keep in mind. Alcohol may inhibit our ability to give consent, and that is a very important thing to keep in mind and remember on both sides. You may not be able to get consent from someone, and you may not be able to give consent, and to always, always be aware of that. But no still means no, regardless of whether alcohol is present or not. And if someone is inebriated, tired, drunk, or otherwise unable to provide that enthusiastic consent, do not proceed. Again, this is called rape. It is real. And that is an ugly word. And a lot of people, especially people who have experienced the trauma of rape, don't like the word. But it's really hard to accept that that is what has happened to us. So if you experience the advances of someone who is not respecting your boundaries, who does not respect your no, or is not responding to your visible discomfort in the situation, and who does not seek enthusiastic consent from you, please tell someone. Self-care is your utmost priority, and don't ever deal with abuse, assault, or rape alone. Even if you're not sure exactly what happened, tell someone. When I was raped, I didn't know what happened. I didn't have the vocabulary to even use the word rape. All I knew is that I felt dirty. I felt like something had happened to me that I didn't want to happen, and I didn't feel safe, and I didn't trust anyone, and I was ashamed. And that's primarily why I didn't tell anyone, is I was ashamed. So,
yeah.
And because I didn't talk to anyone and I didn't share it with anyone other than, unfortunately, my bishop, I was not encouraged to report what had happened to law enforcement. And so I do want to take a moment today and kind of stress the importance of reporting to law enforcement. I wish with all my heart that someone had been there for me immediately after it had happened, that I had had the strength to just open my mouth to someone, and that that someone would have told me, you need to go to the police. And even if you don't know whether it was illegal, if you don't know whether it was rape, you just kind of feel like this icky feeling, there's no risk to going to the police, explaining the situation as best you can. They will be trained to ask the right questions and tell you what has happened and what the legal definition is of what has occurred. They are there to support you. They can answer those questions.
That's kind of what I was going to say to you, Colleen, is I think a lot of what you said nails it right on the head, especially in our community. We're still so ingrained to feel shameful about things like this. And sometimes it does feel confusing. Like, you kind of feel like you're partially responsible. Was it really rape? What really happened? I think the important thing is that you don't have to figure that out right now, but you need to talk to somebody about it right now. Like, right. Don't wait. Just right now, you know, call your best friend. Sure, talk it through, but you need to call the police. Mm-hmm. And I kind of look at it as the same thing I have to go through with mandatory reporting with my students. Mm-hmm. I don't always know that there is a real legitimate case, but I know I need to call.
Right.
And it's not my job to investigate. It's just my job to report. And I think we need to do that for ourselves.
Right.
We advocate for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And people are so afraid to do that. But if, you know, if there wasn't a legitimate situation that requires that, they'll help you understand that. But I think that's the real key. Because if you do wait, especially if you wait too long, there's just so many negative consequences to that.
Yeah.
For yourself, for other people, for the predator. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, there's so many things that you lose by not reporting immediately. You lose that record, that is a legal record of what has occurred. You may lose evidence. If there's physical evidence that can be recovered, that's something that you want immediately, and you don't want to wait. And you need to seek care. One of the benefits of going to the police and with a report of any of the, you know, sexual assault or rape is that they will be able to help you find the resources immediately that you need in your community. And that can save you. That can put you on the path to healing in a much quicker way. And that can save you from a lot of the downward spiral that I experienced in my life.
I think people need to understand that recovering from sexual assault is not something you can do alone.
No.
You need professional help. Even, and I can say this from my own personal experience, even if you like try to push it down or pretend it didn't happen, at some point that is going to rear its head and you are going to have to handle that and deal with it. Yeah. And it's going to be so much more effective to do it from the get-go, you know? Yeah.
And that's something that you and I had talked about earlier. I addressed my unresolved trauma 15 years later, and it was a train wreck. It devastated me for about a year and a half is how long it took me as an adult, 15 years later, to really address the trauma that I had been carrying for that long. I had never sought professional care for what had happened to me. I had never reported it to the police. I did all of that 15 years later, and it was awful. It disrupted relationships in my life. It had affected who I was, and I didn't know. And so dealing with all of those aspects of myself 15 years later that were a result of trauma was really, really shitty. And I wish so badly that I had done it appropriately when it could have changed my life for the better, you know, and changed the past 15 years of handling it myself, not handling it myself and living with, you know, the symptoms and the negative consequences of trauma.
So I think our takeaways, no means no.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, I'm not
report.
Done.
Report.
More.
Report. Keep going. Keep going, Colleen.
Okay. So when you're a victim, you have rights. Basically, I regret not reporting for the rest of my life. I know how it feels in the moment that you feel like you can't. And kind of what I would say to that is, I wish that there was a record. I wish that my perpetrator could have been confronted so that I could have felt like I did my part to society to stop him. It's hard to think of yourself in the aftermath of an attack, outside yourself in the aftermath of an attack. Like, it's so consuming that all you can think about is how you feel. But sometimes thinking outside yourself can help you get out of yourself, out of that funk. And so to me, getting outside of myself meant calling police and filing a report. And even though it was 15 years later and who knows what he was up to now, I felt like at least that was something that I could give back, that I could turn the situation around and I could be in control again and I could do the thing to stop it. And I could save other people from experiencing the same thing I had at the hands of my perpetrator. So, you know, maybe thinking, you know, thinking, taking that exercise and thinking outside yourself and doing something for other people will help get you out of that funk. And it did, it affected my worth. It affected how I felt about myself. I felt awful. And I understand all of those feelings. And I wish that I had a report, a police report to corroborate my story and to take the steps to push back against him for hurting me. So my bottom line is to speak up. You need someone to do it with you. You can't do this alone. I believe you and I support you, and I will find you local physical support. So on multiple occasions in my life, I've needed a friend to literally pick me up off the floor, put me in the car, and drive me to what I needed to do, you know, after a trauma, multiple times in my life. And there are people like that for you. I promise you that there are people like that for you. It just means speaking out to find them, and they're there. And I want to help you find them. And there are other people around you that want you to find those people and get the help that you need. So that's my takeaway. What are your bullet points, Camille?
What you said. But yeah, I think the no means no is a huge one. I don't know why that's so difficult to understand, but I will say very recently I heard a Mormon man, we were discussing another situation, and this person was talking about how, you know, these drive the train full speed and then all of a sudden make it stop. Like, his point was, girls, like, oh, it just made me so angry. You know where I'm going with this.
Yes.
I'm like, you can say no whenever. If you are in the act and then you realize it's not what you want, you can say no. You're right. I am like so much about empowerment of yourself, your sexuality, your body. Nobody owns that. No one has a right to that.
Exactly.
And that is huge to me. Telling someone, I actually just probably a month ago, I had a good friend call me and tell me that he had been raped, I don't know, like in the fall. And he's just now telling me. And he was at that moment suicidal.
Wow.
And he told me he thought that he could just like move on. And he didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want to tell anyone. And he's just now finally getting some help. But I just feel like, thank God he called me instead of taking his life. But if he had reported it right away and gotten help right away, he wouldn't have, hopefully he wouldn't have gotten to that point where he was at in that moment. So that goes back to the point of, you've got to get help. Earlier the better. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Colleen, like when you do that with the police, they have resources to help you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really critical. So those are my takeaways.
Well, thank you. Thanks for hanging in with our super serious discussion. And
I just have to say too, I'm sorry, Colleen. I forgot. I was going to say this. Like, I don't know if I'm the only one, but maybe it's just because I'm still new to the whole ex-Mormon world. But I did not know that this was like a thing, like that there were these ex-Mormon predators. Like, when you first brought this up, my mind went to, you know, the Mormon predators. Like, because we've talked about that. That's more out there. But I didn't realize that was something that we needed to be aware of in this community. And that makes me sad. I'm glad that you brought that up. I didn't even know about it.
And just as a PS, want to put it out there that I am listening, and that if there is a predator that enters my space and I know about it and I'm made aware of it, that I will out you. So just be on notice that.
Yes, queen.
We're there to keep each other safe, and we got each other's backs, and you can't hide, and what you're doing is not okay, and you cannot continue to do that. That's it.
Nobody has the right to anyone else's sexuality.
No.
Damn it.
All right, so we'll close this portion, and then we'll move on to something a little bit more positive, so thank you for sticking through. And we're back. All right. So now we're going to bring to you the much anticipated and woefully missed Mormon Sexmas, back to Mormon Happy Hour. So we've collected a few more and we're ready to talk about them because they are hilarious. So I came across on an Instagram account called People of Provo that I happen to follow just so I can find gems like this. So you know it's legit. And we just start out by saying that this has been a confirmed myth. This exists. This is a real thing. There is now a new term called derfing. And I will put a link to the Instagram post from People of Provo that, and so that way you know my reference. So I had to Google it and I found it was on, because I was like, what the heck is derfing? I don't know what derfing is. So I looked up the word because I'm like, this meme isn't making any sense to me because I don't know what derfing is. So something about like when your bishop asks about derfing, and then it was some meme of Steve-O. So anyway, I'll post it. It'll make sense once I explain. When I Googled derfing, I got the Urban Dictionary definition. And let me see if I can pull it up now. The Urban Dictionary definition basically tells you that derfing is it's a mashup of dry fucking. So it's exactly the same thing as dry humping, which is what I used to call it when I was a kid. But these hip BYU kids are just making up shit still. Different terms. So let me see. I want to pull up the, what do you call it? The Urban Dictionary.
Urban.
Okay. Derfing. Load.
I just followed People of Provo while you were talking.
They're going to get a whole bunch of new follows and be like, what the heck?
You've taught me so much, Colleen.
Brittany, I've taught you so much. Okay.
I appreciate it.
Here it is. So there's several definitions. Number one has to do with Mormons. It's awesome. Number one, the top definition, the act of most commonly used by Mormon girls of dry humping through clothes, often accompanied by blue balls on the part of the guy and a guilty conscience on the part of the girl. Why just the girl? Hello?
Does that mean that this is mostly used by girls, this term? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think that's accurate. If it is, no way.
I'm confused.
Because the quote, I don't know if you spend a lot of time on Urban Dictionary, but the quote to go along with it is, we were derfing so hard on the counter, I thought my dick might break. So obviously that's from the male point of view.
I feel like I have a lot of experience with derfing.
Okay, so now I have to read you. I was wrong. It is not dry fucking. It is something different. Oh. Here we go. The act of dry humping while making out mostly between normal Mormons in Provo, Utah, a typical hookup among Mormon millennials involves making out and derfing, aka dick surfing. That's where the word comes from.
Oh, it's dick surfing. I'm a fan. I like dick surfing. But without the pillow.
Yeah, without the pillow.
I'm gonna start using that term all the time now.
Dick surfing, I like it.
Well, that or derping, whatever, it's fine. It's all good. I'm just stunned. I feel like I was living under a rock. Although maybe it's just I didn't go to BYU, but I didn't know about all these terms for things. I didn't even know the things were things.
Exactly. So the other definitions or other terms that were being thrown around, because I posted this in quite a few places online, as I do, so I can do research for the show.
As you do. Yeah, you're thorough that way. I appreciate that.
So we have the term Levi Lovin', which is also was really popular back in the day, it sounds like. So there's Levi Loving, dry humping, which is the term that I used to know. The Provo push. I'm sorry. I just feel like that's a reference to childbirth, right? Not dry humping. That's
something wrong with Provo. No offense, Provo. I don't understand. Okay, go on. Go on, Colleen.
A good one was zipper sparking. I like that one.
I have not heard that one either. Wow.
I think I like that one as much as dick surfing. I think I like zipper sparking is fun. And then
it's better than the Provo.
Oh yeah. Provo puck is rough.
It's wrong. So many ways.
So the last one and my absolute favorite that was shared is dry farming, which is the Idaho version of dry humping.
Dry farming? Oh, dear. This is what we're pushing the youth to, Colleen. Yes. The sexually repressed Mormons. This is what happens.
Dry farming is what happens.
Dry farming happens. Yeah. It's not pretty.
So, and on an upcoming episode, some other terms came to light while we were doing this research that we will share with you in an upcoming episode. Bagpiping. Did you hear about that one?
I feel like I read it, but I can't remember what it meant. So no spoiler. I'm excited to talk. I won't, because I don't even remember. It's going to be good. It's amazing. I feel like I might know what that is. Okay, yeah. It's gonna be good.
So bagpiping, we'll go back to soaking. I know we've covered it before, but we'll have to go back because there's another term that you have to know, soaking, in order to explain earthquaking. So we'll get to that in another episode. And
I have a personal story about soaking, too, that I'll share.
Oh, yes. And this is why we bring Camille on, so we can have some personal soaking evidence.
I have real life evidence about the soaking, but I didn't know it was called soaking because, yeah, I didn't know, but that's the thing that happens too.
So, as a segue between, soaking, we have something else that we were going to cover today. It was a story about just the tip. Because that has to do with soaking, right? Kind of.
Sure. If it's just the tip, it doesn't count. Didn't you know this?
It's not even soaking if it's just the tip.
Yeah. God doesn't acknowledge tips. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
Another story that was shared has to do with just the tip. And there was a story about that in the Young Women's Manual years ago about a camel in a sandstorm asking his owner if he could just stick his nose in the tent flap. And by the end of the story, the whole camel is in the tent. And we all know what that means. So
I'm just imagining a BYU young man just saying, can I just put the tip in. That's it. That's all. That's what I'm thinking of. Oh, anyway. Go on. Tell us.
I'm pretty sure I've lived that reality, Camille. Pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure you have. Probably 90% of Mormon women have, I feel like.
At BYU especially.
Yeah. I didn't go to BYU. So.
Lucky you.
I know. I feel very blessed in my life.
So I had to investigate that myth. So I asked, wait, I need a link. Where's this lesson? And I was provided on LDS.org in the teachings of Spencer W. Kimball Manual, chapter 10, the entire camel in a sandstorm, just the tip story. Folks, it exists. It's real life. It's on LDS.org right this instant. So I will put that in the show notes. And if you need a lesson for family home evening, this is a good one.
What was the accompanying message with the story? I'm really curious.
Basically that Satan will weasel his way into your life. That's the moral. Cause Satan's a snake. He'll weasel in.
Oh, dirty.
Right?
Kind of turned on now, by the way.
Ew, by camels and sandstorms or by Satan? All right. right. So yeah. That's it for this week. Check back in next week. We will keep doing this because now we got a good thing going. So keep the myths coming in. Okay. Keep the submissions coming. We always need new material. If you ever hear something, send it our way because we definitely want to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. I always am looking for new material.
Thanks so much, guys.
Bye.
I want to welcome back to the show Delaney Darko. We had her on a few episodes ago. She got to share with us her brilliant ideas for the church on how they could use their $32 billion. So if you haven't heard it, I'll link it again in the show notes. It's hilarious. Delaney, do you want to kind of give us a short introduction?
Sure. I'm Delaney Darko. I started writing a blog about finding the nuance in Mormonism and just people in general at the beginning of the year, and I've been more and more active in the post-Mormon community this year, but I left 4 years ago. So thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much. So she is a longtime listener, friend of the show. We're glad to have her on once again. And today I brought her on to talk about the church issued on June 20th, 2018. The church released on Mormon Newsroom, First Presidency releases new guidelines for interviewing youth. So this is probably about the third time that they've updated their youth guidelines this year, I want to say. The one that was most significant that I remember was back in March, right around the Children's March, the Protect LDS Children March that Sam Young planned for Salt Lake. They introduced new guidelines literally days before his scheduled march in Salt Lake to deliver the petition signatures, the story, the sacred stories of sacred children, and that giant march that had nearly 1,000 people marching down the streets in Salt Lake. So that was the first, possibly the second, but the most notable one that I remember that they were responding to the Protect LDS Children movement. And so then when this one came out on June 20th, which was just about a week and a half ago, I was wondering, like, what prompted them to come out with new youth guidelines? And then it dawned on me that Sam Young just had another event. He planned and coordinated another worldwide event where he encouraged people to wear Protect LDS Children buttons anywhere they were, hopefully in church, in LDS sacrament meetings, so that they could start conversations about the movement. So Children's Day is a national holiday. It's not just a Sam Young thing, but he took advantage of Children's Day, which is June 10th, to also raise awareness for Protect LDS Children. And so then these new guidelines came out 10 days later on June 20th. So I thought that possibly that's another thing that, that triggered them to once again address these youth guidelines again. And so the first time around, we were not very happy with the changes that went down. They really didn't make any changes. This time around, I did write down some positives, but primarily I think the takeaway is that, again, they're really not changing anything. Sexually explicit questions are still going to be asked. One-on-one interviews are still going to occur. It's a softer doubling down than what we saw in March. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's still sanctioned grooming, and it's almost worse now, like Sammy Young said, because they add the wording that parents can be there, but that just adds a level of making it okay. My parents are there too. There's some small positives, but I'm just glad there's a movement now and that Sam Young is leading this movement for these changes, because he will keep pushing. And as the conversation keeps happening, more and more members are realizing that, you know, this really isn't okay and I don't feel comfortable putting my children in this kind of situation. Any movement that's pushing for change, it's going to be slow. And I'm positive for changes in the future because, like you said, I've already responded to his petition in the writing of the guidelines a number of times this year, and we can only hope that we'll keep seeing more and more changes. My fear is that he'll keep pushing and pushing as he should, and then get excommunicated. Hopefully it doesn't lead to that, but the church is notorious for shooting itself in the foot, so we'll see what happens.
He made a blog post just the other day, and I'll throw that in the show notes too, where he recounted meeting with his state presidency, who talked to Anderson, who is a general, I think he's a general authority 70, and he got the impression that excommunication is off the table now, because it was threatened.
Right.
I'm really encouraged that it is off the table, and that he, basically the bottom line was, you are allowed to continue to push for change and do what you're doing, just do it outside of sacrament meeting, which he's like, totally fine, because that is a completely different message than what he received in the last meeting, where he was told, what you're doing is not okay, not okay, not okay, and you're going to get excommunicated. Now what he's being told is, it's okay, just don't do it in church, which he's like, I can respect that. That's fine.
Like, that's something he can work with. That's reasonable.
Right.
And that, you're right, that is different. And maybe people who seek change within the church take note from Sam Young. I think he's done it differently than maybe some other movements.
Mm-hmm.
He's still asking a lot, though. You know, I think we can learn a lot from Sam Young, and I think he works, I don't want to say play his cards well, because that makes it sound like he's not genuine.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he has a good personality to both lead the movement and gracious enough to be like, okay, I can work with that. Because his end goal is not to make the church look bad. His end goal is to help kids in the church grow up without being shamed, or heaven forbid, without being abused, you know?
So let's go through the actual guidelines that have been updated, and we'll kind of talk about what they say and give reactions. These guidelines should be shared with youth and their parents before the first interview held by a bishop, branch president, or counselor in the bishopric or branch presidency. And those, which I think is good. I think it's good that they are, the word should, I have a problem with, but I think it's good that they are saying, share it with each individual child, that this isn't something that's being read over the pulpit once and that's it. Because like, what if that kid was out going to the bathroom? Or what if that kid is 8 freaking years old and not paying attention to what this guy's saying? Like, I think it's good that they're saying, each individual child gets this message before their interview. If should means make sure you do it, which to me, those are a little bit different messages. But
you should do this, but is it optional? They need to be so clear, because most bishops are normal, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to get some zealots that we'll find wiggle room and say, well, the wording says should, it doesn't say you have to, or something like that.
Exactly. That's my concern as well. Or if you forget, it's no big deal. Like, no consequences are going to, and I'm like, no, there are. There are consequences if you forget. It's in a very important step. So the guidelines that are going to be presented include this wording. If a youth desires, he or she may invite a parent or another adult to be present when meeting with the bishop or one of his counselors. And this was, of course, present in the revision they did in March, but I like that they are specifically saying that they're going to share it with each child. I think that's important. So it clarifies and says, generally, children younger than 11 are not interviewed except in preparation for baptism.
So they're not interviewed except they are.
Right. And then it does say that these interviews are different in nature from youth interviews, and parents are typically present. So I just, again, it's that loose language that just says, nah, these are some loose best case scenario guidelines that you should probably be aware of, but whatever, you know, follow the spirit. So the thing we pointed out earlier, that this doesn't exclude questions of a sexual nature, that the preface does also clarify the role of parents, which I think is important. And this may be a bit different than revisions they've made in the past. They do say parents also counsel with their children regarding worthiness and help them repent and improve. Bishops and other church leaders support parents in these efforts. So it's putting the parents in the primary role, saying that bishops support parents, bishops don't support children, which I'm like, that's just wording, because bishops are still doing the interview. So how are they not supporting are directly involved with the children. Like, those are contradictory statements. But I do like the fact that they are putting parents in the role of being in charge of their children's worthiness when it comes to anything, especially sexuality.
The way I interpret that is it's the responsibility of the parent and it's their role, and the bishop should not fight the parent on what the parent says is right for their kid.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's a good thing, because you've heard of, you know, I want to be with my children in the interview, but the bishop doesn't want that, you know, because for some reason it's undermining his authority or right. whatever. That's how I interpret it, is, you know, bishops should support the parents in what the parent decides.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then the schedule for these interviews then is every 6 months. So starting just before they turn 12, every 6 months they are to have these worthiness interviews with the bishop. And they also have updated in this particular release to clarify that they will be using the questions that they'll be using the standard limited use temple recommend questions. So that's a bit of a change. Now, limited use temple recommends are for people who may not have received their own endowments yet. They're for uses like temple baptisms for the dead, temple dedications, children being sealed to their parents, or any non-endowed members who would like to observe temple ordinances. So that's pretty much a synopsis of the changes or non-changes. Did you have any other thoughts in regards to the new guidelines?
Yes, I did. I was thinking these are guidelines for the worthiness interviews, and I almost think there needs to be a totally different set of guidelines for like a confession situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of those situations kind of get muddled when talking about that, but I think they're totally different situations, because a spiritual leader does play a role in helping the youth with maybe heavy things they're dealing with. Maybe they don't want to talk to mom or dad. If they're a youth counselor type person in any faith, I think that's a different situation. I think there still needs to be guidelines though to make sure that harm is not done. So those are just my thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. I think my takeaway is that this is kind of another non-change. The one-on-one interviews are still happening. Doesn't anywhere mention not asking sexually explicit questions. It does say something to the effect of don't ask questions that are going to arouse curiosity, which I hope that is something that bishops adhere to. Which means yeah. if they adhere to that, then that's going to keep their questions pretty PG, which is mm-hmm. better. That's an improvement. There was another phrase that was pointed out where they mentioned that bishops should avoid any situations that could be misunderstood. And that right. really, really bothered me, because that, to me, that phrasing, that statement, operates under the assumption that bishops could never do anything harmful, that they would never knowingly or unknowingly harm a child. And I think that is absolutely where the problem originates, is they refuse to acknowledge that harm occurs. Any harm that is claimed to have occurred is simply a misunderstanding. And so that wording really irritated me.
Yeah, no, I agree, because it kind of provides a cop-out. If anything were to happen, it was a misunderstanding. And it's a common like cop-out for that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Back at the very beginning of this, you mentioned grooming. And that's something that in my own personal activism within the Protect LDS Children movement, something that I really, really stress is the fact that when these interviews include any form of sexual questioning, even the interview setting in and of itself, regardless of the sexual questions, simply the interview, the setting where a child 11 years, even 8 years, if the child is alone, from 8 years to 11 up to 18, these children me, when I was a child, we were taught that it's okay to meet one-on-one in private and in secret. Like anything you discuss doesn't leave that room, in secret with an older man who gets to ask you questions, very personal questions about where you touch yourself, how often it happens, you know, did you enjoy it? Like all of these things groom our children that situation is okay. And what that means is that can translate in a child's mind and in a child's experience. And me, even when I was 18 years old, it translated to any other setting where a man in authority is asking those questions, it's okay. And that that man could be their soccer coach, their principal, their teacher at school, their Cub Scout den leader. And that's where our children are put at risk, because they've already been taught that those situations are okay. So they have no reason to fear or feel uncomfortable or ask for help, because they've been groomed that it's normal.
Right. To say, I feel uncomfortable with this, I'm going to leave. It's like, I feel uncomfortable with this, but this is what I have to do because this bishop and we have to do these interviews and I really want to go to the temple.
And my parents said that I have to. So I can't go to my parents and tell my parents that I'm uncomfortable, because my parents are part of the system that told me that I have to do this. So it's so dangerous.
I think members need to pay attention to this movement, because it just highlights why the church makes policy changes. Mm-hmm. They're not proactive in their policies. They do not have the inspiration to see that there are issues, and they don't have the guts to call the church out or its members out and say, we can do better. Anytime policy changes have happened since I've left the church that I've paid attention to, it's because there's pushback from the outside that are saying, this is not right, the church can do better, and I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I got all my thoughts out. How do you feel?
Good.
All right.
That was a good venting. Thank you.
Well, Delaney, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'm going to put in your blog and anything else you want me to put in that is Delaney Darko. I'm more than willing and happy to share all of your creative talent in the show notes. So if you haven't checked out Delaney Darko yet, please do. She's hilarious and she's doing some wonderfully creative things.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Delaney. That wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers!